Hello and welcome to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast. Each week, we talk about different college admissions topics and answer those tough questions you may be dealing with concerning getting into the college of your choice. We know how difficult this process can be, so each week, we try and make it easier to navigate. Now, here's your host, Anna Wren and Mark Huffer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast. Your host here, Anna Wren, with
Mark Huffer.
And we're super excited to have you guys here today because we're going to be talking about preparing for college beyond the application. So, Mark, what are we talking about today?
We've had so many conversations about preparing for college and preparing for applications and all that. And one of the things we have kind of touched on in different subjects, but all the things that prepare you for successful college adventure. And I think we're going to explore a couple of those topics today.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's beyond the application means not only just, I think, setting them up for success in college, but also life. These are good life skills too.
Absolutely. I think I teach a lot of leadership. And when you teach leadership, a lot of times you talk about you have to lead yourself before you can lead others. And I think that's one of the things we've got. Lots of juniors and seniors who are all thinking about college, and they're thinking about the academics that set them up successfully for that, but they may not have paid as much attention to some of those psychological and emotional foundation skills that allow them to be successful academically.
Absolutely. And given that there is a good amount of kids that go away for school too and live away from home, I think, you know, learning to manage sleep, what they eat, other things are all very important.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things that you and I hear from our students once they get to college, especially in their first year, but even into their second year, is they're finding out what went right the first year and what went wrong or could have gone better. We talk to them and they say, you know, a lot of these simple life things and these living away from school, living away from home and learning to be an adult and take care of yourself are actually as important as the academic part.
So let's kick it off with the first one. I'm going to tackle what you think is super important that they should learn how to do first.
Oh, shoot. The very first one, I think that I break it down into a couple of different things. There's psychological skills, which are personal and that kind of thing. And then there's social skills and probably just the survival skills like we've talked about on some of the other podcasts that we've done. But I think the first psychological skill that I have students really take under wing is reflection. And it's basically identifying what's important to you so that when you are faced with challenges and questions when you go to school or go to college, that you identify what is most important to you, what are you about, so that when you're faced with that question, you know which direction to go. You've already had some of those thoughts go through your head and you've bantered with them yourself.
That's a great point, because you will come across a diverse set of people in college. From, I think it ranges from racial to socioeconomic to religious, you know, just... you can throw anything out there and you will find someone that is radically different. And I think learning how to coexist is important.
Exactly. I think those choices, the ability to make the choices and coexist with people who have different choices that they're making. You know, the classics are you going to party on Friday night or are you going to go study because you know I have a test coming or a paper that's due on Monday? And I think those are just, if you're used to making those kind of reflective choices, it becomes habitual and it's a behavior that you've already established so that when you're faced with those choices, and like you say, some people are coming to college because it's time to party and other people are coming there to get down to work. So I think if you know what you're about and have made those choices already, you can, it makes that choice-making process a little easier maybe.
That's a great point. And I think you bring up another point where it's like you will face additional temptation, let's put it that way. And your parents aren't necessarily there to say, no, you shouldn't do that. So you're going to have to make those choices for yourself. And I even remember from when I was a freshman, it was like a Thursday night. And someone had invited me out to go to like a house party. And I was like, no, I have to study. I have to do my homework. And they're like, it's not due till Monday. And I'm like, I know, but it takes time to do. And the material is just not coming so easily to me. And it took like, I think so much persuading before I realized, okay, well, let me at least get to this point in my assignment and then I'll come out.
Exactly. And that's one of the tough things. I think that's part of those social skills is it's directly tied to the choice-making skills. And how do you communicate what you're about to somebody else so that they're A, not offended, B, they understand where you're coming from, and C, that you get what you need done without feeling like you're caving in.
That is all helpful. And, you know, talking about it, I mean, I don't think you always have to make sacrifices necessarily, but one thing I think is important if students haven't learned in high school is time management.
You think?
Just a little bit. But like, what do you think? What are some of your tips and tricks for your students when they go off to college in terms of managing their time?
Well, the big one for me is, as an adult, time management is as difficult as it was in college, especially for me. I like so many different things and do so many different things that I think it's much like college. You want to do it all, but there's X number of hours in the day. I think one of the things that's helped me the most in what I share with a lot of students, and I'm amazed at how many students have started to do this already, is I'm a big fan of checklists. I wasn't originally, but after using them for a couple of years, I found that they really do help you identify just visually, I've got these things to do. And then it's kind of like this little reward when you get to check the box and it's done.
Yes. I am a to-do list person too. And so one of the apps I use is actually called Todoist. And you can get it on, I think you can get it on your phone and your like computer or whatever. And it's awesome to be able to just check it off and cross it out and to see that line go through. And I know for like even some of my students, they'll say, can I have a to-do list so that they remember everything they need to work on? But then I have students whose parents are even more involved and they'll say, you should be writing down. Anna should not tell you what to do. You should know when you get home. So there's different versions of that as well. But also just using a simple calendar to schedule your time or a planner. I know that's like so, like, I don't know, 1990s maybe to use a planner. But I find that helps to know, okay, this is going to take this amount of time. Let me set that aside. And then you can figure out, well, where else do you have extra time then and slot in where things go.
Yeah, exactly. I do a demonstration. It's kind of hokey, but I think it actually makes a huge visual impact and it kind of drives the message home where I take a beaker, and maybe you've seen this, but I take a beaker and then I drop golf balls into it. And I ask, is it full? And a lot of people say no. And I say, so then I take some pebbles and I pour those in and I fill it up to the top and I say, is it full? And they say, no. And then I pour sand in and is it full? No. And I said, then I start pouring water in and then it comes up to the brim and pretty much everybody says, okay, now it's full. Mm. And I said, one of the biggest things that you have to do is you have to identify what you do first. What are your golf balls? What are the things that are most important? And usually that's, you know, academics, family, things that have to do with your health and life.
Yes.
And if you don't take care of those and put those in your calendar or your planner first, you're not going to get to them. And that's when the problems happen.
I've never seen that example before, but I've done a similar exercise where it's like a... There's an article somewhere where you're juggling crystal balls or different balls, but you cannot afford to let certain ones drop, such as your health or your family, because those are things that you cannot, they won't bounce back, unfortunately. So you do have to take care of certain things first. But that's a great example. I should do that next time.
Actually,
I can get a beaker.
I'm going to steal the glass balls. That is actually a really good, there's certain ones you can't drop. And if you do, like you say, the ramifications can be nasty.
Yes, indeed. The next one, how about living away from home and dealing with homesickness? I know most kids are like, I can't wait. But what do you have to say on this?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there are those students who, and it makes you wonder what drives that psychologically. Some students, the last thing they want to do is go to school close by. And others, they want to get, as close to home as possible so that they have kind of a safety net and support system. But it's interesting how that decision process happens. When students get away from home, then it's one of the classics of, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence until you're actually on the other side of the fence.
Right.
And then, you find out that some of those things that were taken care of for you at home suddenly become in your ballpark. So.
Yeah. And I would say even things you don't realize, and we'll talk about laundry, food, just when you get your first not so great grade and your mom and dad are there to give you a hug. When you go to school further from home, you're not going to have that. And I tell my students, I'd like you to do some activity where you're outside of your comfort zone. So you're with complete strangers.
Yeah.
You don't have your friends, you don't have your family. And I want to see how you do. And if you feel comfortable and if you do okay with that, then we know for sure you're okay away. But there are some kids that are so intrinsically tied to their family that they don't realize that during that transition, that they can't do it on their own, and absolutely, they need to kind of take baby steps.
Yeah, I think one of the fun words that's entered our vernacular recently is "framily," and that's your friends who are your family. And there's the family that you're born with and the family you choose. Mm-hmm. And I think when you go to school, that's actually one of those skills that will be a very important one, is establishing who your family is in your support system. Because like you say, what do you do? Who do you talk to, and who's going to be your support and your shoulder when that first bad grade comes in? Not that anybody's going to get bad grades.
Correct. That's not going to happen at all.
Never.
And I think the other thing to keep in mind is I don't know if you've ever had this with your students, but I've had this with mine, especially the kids who go to let's say top 30, top 40 schools. And they just come back and they feel this is not what I thought it would be. Especially if they come from a diverse area and they feel like it's just, I'm gonna be on PC for a second, it's very white and very preppy. Uh-huh. And with the popped polo collars and everything like that. And it's not what they expected. And I said, it doesn't matter. If you want to go to a good school, you should know that that's part of the culture probably at most of those schools. But you can find your own niche. You will find your own home. You will find your own friends that love to do the things you like to do, whether it be singing a cappella or protesting on campus, whatever it is. So don't think that just because you see a lot of something that you're not going to fit in there.
Agreed. I think that's also one of those skills is to establish and start to learn when you're in high school and you think you already know how to do it. But like you said, early on, when you're faced with many different cultures and many different attitudes and social constructs, that you have to be able to identify who you resonate with, who you respect, who you can trust, and that's basically going to be your support system. And I think you're exactly right. That's one of those things where you don't know until you're in it.
Yes. Let's talk about some of the fun stuff, though, like laundry and cooking.
Well, yeah, laundry and cooking, they're fun for some people. And how many students, this is a good one. So how many students do you know, they go in and their first semester or quarter before they come home for Christmas, they have not done laundry and they bring it all home.
I have not personally known anyone that has done that, but I have heard, or I went to a very fortunate school, let's say, and I think their parents actually set them up with laundry service, so they could just drop it off
That's
by the pounds.
Wrong.
I know, right? But most schools hopefully don't offer that. So you do have to learn.
I agree. Well, and then the secondary part of that is, well, just knowing how to do laundry and knowing you separate, you know, colors from whites and knowing temperatures that you wash things in and that you don't put certain things in the dryer. If you don't have those skills going into college, it's going to get expensive really quick and you're going to look, everything's going to be pink, which really kind of a bummer.
Or then, everything's going to be like the size of a kid's and you realize, oh, I can't wear that to class.
This sweater is not going to work.
Yeah, but I had a classmate of mine who stayed in a dorm with a prince, like a real prince. And she said she didn't know it was him though, because when she first saw him, he was doing his own laundry in the basement. Yep. And so we were like thinking, well, if a prince can do his own laundry, then there is no excuse we can't.
Exactly. Well, and then after you do the laundry, then you have to know what to do with it after. And I think that, you know, if laundry is dangerous, ironing things is a whole different level of danger in your wardrobe.
Yes. And I will give you a trick. If you have clothes that are ironed and you don't need to wear them frequently, just take them off as soon as you wear it and hang it up and try not to get it dirty so you are not ironing as often as you need to.
Exactly. My wife taught me when we first started seeing each other, she taught me a great trick of where when you take a shirt out of the dryer and if you take it and you snap it, you know, just give it a real good snap and then you put it on a hanger, about 50% of the wrinkles will come out on their own just sitting overnight. So it's a great way to, you know, minimize the amount of work you're going to have to do ironing.
That's true. Yeah. Don't leave your clothes in the dryer after it's dry. They will become wrinkled.
Eventually they're going to wrinkle.
So let's talk food. Cause we love food. So I think most schools require a meal plan, but you know, I think you have options, whether you pick like block meals, so like a set amount each term or X many meals per week. But what if you hate the food?
Agreed. Well, one of the things I noticed, especially in the last 2 or 3 years, so many colleges are using their food service as a star, as an attraction and incentive to get students to come to their school. It's amazing how much money is being put into food service now so that, you know, there are so many different options available for students. But if you don't know, I mean, if the food that is available, if you're going to a small school that doesn't have a lot of options, you've got to figure out something to do so that you don't starve. And we've talked about this in the past. So what are the top things that, you know, going to college, a student should absolutely have the skill, cooking skills to do? What would you say the top ones are?
I would say you just need to be able to know how to cook ramen and mac and cheese.
I agree. You know, you can survive a long time on those two things. Now, if you wanted to go gourmet, what would you do?
I would probably just sprinkle things into it.
Exactly. Like?
I think you can get frozen veggies. Just sprinkle like some peas and carrots and corn. Or actually, I think they even have frozen spinach too. So I guess you could be super classy and throw in spinach too. Or I like the egg, but everyone's a little different.
For sure. Yeah, I'm a big egg person. You know, get your protein. And if you've got ramen noodles and you've got mac and cheese and you're able to find, even if it's a simple protein source like egg, or if it's a simple protein source like pre-cooked chicken, put that in there. You actually, it's amazing how long you can survive almost healthy with just those few things.
Yes. And do take heed. The freshman 15 is real. Oh my God. So, you know, that brings us to our next point in terms of please make sure you eat balanced meals. Mom and dad are not there to force you to eat veggies or fruit, but you should.
Agreed. That's eating habits are basically something that is a behavior, a psychological habit that you've created. And if you haven't established those things and you've had somebody have to tell you, you know, you really should eat some greens and you should eat, you know, some veggies. Going to college, it's unless you've already established those habits, it is going to be tough.
Yes, you can't just eat chicken fingers and french fries.
No. Well, you can, but that 15 becomes the freshman 15 in one quarter.
Yes. And it's a lot harder. You'll realize, I think, at some point, I don't know if you had this with your group, like our metabolism starts to slow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like somewhere in college, it starts to slow. And what you think you could eat, you can no longer eat.
Uh-huh. And especially if you're spending time studying and sitting when you're not used to it for those long periods of time or writing, that actually works against you and your metabolism. And that's one of the things, like you talked about early, is you have to have that balance. You have to know and establish that not only time balance, but also what you're doing. So you have to make sure you get the activity as well. That's just as important as what you're eating and how much sleep you're getting.
And there's lazy fruit too. Like I like to call it, bananas are for lazy people, right? Grapes are for lazy people. You have no excuse.
Exactly. I mean, that's, I always have to laugh when I see somebody who says, well, ketchup, does that count as one of my vegetable things of the day? And, you know, that's a tough one. I don't know. We'll see. We've talked about some of those survival skills. One of the survival skills that I actually put up there, and it's also a social skill, is tying a tie. Now, I know this sounds weird, but guys, anyone should know how to tie a tie. It is one of those things that's almost now, if you can tie a good tie or a double Windsor knot or multiple types of knots, or, you know, God forbid, a bow tie, it is one of those things that has almost become like a party skill. It is a trick if you can tie your own tie, or if this is one of those things, if you can tie somebody else's tie, you can become somebody who is a valuable commodity.
Yes, I agree with you, especially if you're a girl. So girls take heed too, not just boys.
Oh, shoot. If a woman can come up and say, here, let me get that tie for you, or straighten it, or make it clean, that makes such an incredible impression. And it is one of those things where, you know, you basically can take a bow and wave to the crowd as they cheer.
Yes. And it's funny, because now that you mention it, my brother actually learned how to tie ties in college. And I think it's between all the different functions you might have, and then eventually job interviews, it is a great life skill to have.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's one of those things. If you can tie a well-tied tie, and that's everything from knowing how it's symmetrical and knowing that you put a little dimple in the bottom of the tie when you're tying. If you can do that, that makes a huge impression when you come in for either an internship interview, a grad school interview, or even what's that thing called? A job interview. So all of those things are, you're just setting yourself up for success later. So you might as well learn how to do it while you're in high school and take it to college with you.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely. The other thing I would say is is managing money.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a psychological, a social, and survival skill all in one, because it touches on so many of them. What are some of the scary things that you've heard from students as they head off to college and suddenly are faced with their own finances?
I think it's that they've spent all the money.
Yeah.
Exactly. Before the next installment is coming in from mom and dad. So what I would caution parents is don't give it to them in like a lump sum for like a semester or even a month. Like if you can do it bi-weekly or weekly and set it up that way, yep. Do that.
My wife is a CFP, and she talks about, you know, we actually discuss a lot of similar things because we're dealing with families and school and long-term goal setting. And one of the things that has changed in our society is we've gone from a monetary system where you actually have a transaction where you hand somebody something and they give you the change back. So you have a psychological model of how much it was and how much you have. And if you don't have that transaction, you don't have any real mental picture of how much you just spent and how much you have left. So with a credit card and swiping, and now with, you know, everything from just waving your your phone or your watch over something, you have no cognition of what just happened. And I think that's one of the dangerous things of today's swipe and buy type transaction is students just get in the habit of, well, I just waved my phone over the top and now it's gone. But they don't know how much is gone.
Exactly. Especially with, I think that's a main reason for, credit card debt is they just swipe, not really thinking about, wow, this, I have to pay this later. How will I pay this? How much am I racking up?
Well, equally dangerous, and I don't know how many students you've had do this, is where parents trying to do the best for their children that they possibly can, they give them a credit card when they go to college. And because that student doesn't have a concept of money that has to be paid and that kind of thing and that kind of transaction, a lot of parents are just blown away with the first 10 weeks cost that their child has just created with that credit card.
Yes. Absolutely. So I think teaching them and getting a low credit card in the beginning is a good idea.
Agreed. Well, one of the things, the flip side of that is, and especially because your credit score and your credit rating is so directly tied to how you both spend money and how you pay off money, I didn't have a credit card until I had graduated one of the first couple times. And what that does is you don't have a credit rating at that point, and then you can't get a loan. So it's important that I think students actually have a credit card, but they also know how to pay it off, monthly. And that way they establish a really good credit score by the time that they need to either buy something like a car or, a down payment on a house.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I don't think kids realize, usually I feel like the first purchase they buy is actually a car, like you said, and you can't do that with bad credit. So, I think back in, we had our first credit card in high school, I think.
Yep.
Later in high school. But the limit was crazy. It was $500. So you always, and I think my parents always said, okay, make sure you pay it off every month. And so I think that instilled good habits.
Yeah. I think one of the easy ways to establish those good habits, my wife suggests to her families that she works with, is have their kids open a checking account, which is a skill on its own. And then after you open the checking account, maintain checks and a balance and make sure that it's a balanced account. And get used to that transaction happening when you write a check and you buy something and then there is an amount that is decreased from your account and get used to that psychological model. Even though checks are not used as much as they are, they're still a legal tender, as is cash.
Yes.
So I think it's good to use those once in a while.
Absolutely. And you know what? I don't know about your state, but in New Jersey, kids actually have to learn how to do that before they graduate high school.
Oh,
it's a required class.
So the financial literacy is part of the high school graduation
requirements. Yeah.
See, now I think we'd be in a lot better situation if that was a national requirement, just as valuable as anything else. My wife, I often ask people, what's the most valuable one skill that you should have when you graduate from high school? And when I asked my wife the first time, she said compound interest. And I think just understanding how compound interest works allows you to understand the loan that you're taking out in college, allows you to understand if you are investing, how that works to your advantage. And if you're taking a loan from somebody, how compound interest works against you.
Yes.
A deep hole quickly.
Absolutely. And since many kids do have to take out loans, that is a concept they should understand.
Agreed.
Let's talk some more psychological stuff. So one of the things I think is learning how to self-advocate, but also to give and receive criticism.
Absolutely. I mean, I think everybody, especially when, and the point you brought up about when you're thrown into a large group of people who have different, they come from different places and they've had different experiences and have different cultures and different mindsets that they bring to the table. When you talk about giving and receiving criticism, I think more than anything, there is a very ripe situation for misunderstanding. And I think learning how to hear other people give you criticism and also to provide criticism in a diplomatic and socially respectful way, that can be the most valuable skill that you're going to not only take to college, but refine when you're there so that you take it to the professional world.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing you'll realize is, like, I feel there is a difference between professors and teachers. And I think you do have to understand at some point that you will not be coddled if you do get that in high school. So yeah. Just be sure to not take everything personally is what I would say.
Agreed. Humility is probably one of the best. Humility and empathy are two of those things, those mindsets that you cannot practice enough and you cannot cultivate often enough. So I think those are things that if you can start practicing them in high school and earlier, they pay off in dividends that you can't imagine in college and beyond.
True. What else do you think is important? What else is on the list?
Well, and this is a psychological, social kind of clown skill that I think everybody should have. And clown skills, I kind of lump those into those things that almost are tricks of habit and tricks of social skills. And the big one for me, I think, is more students than I know don't learn how to establish when to sleep and why. And what it does is if they don't get enough, it slams into their immune system. It suffers that freshman 15. It makes a brain that makes bad decision and bad choices. So I think learning how to establish sleep patterns is huge. What do you think?
I would agree. I actually, I don't know if I ever talked about this on the show before, but I actually developed insomnia in college. So
what year were you when that happened?
It was actually my senior year. And so I had been good with sleep. Oh, actually, no, that's not true. So it actually started probably my sophomore year, and then it became a recurring problem my senior year. It righted itself during study abroad, ironically, because I went to a country, Australia, that is very laid back.
Yep.
So it just being in that environment and being able to nap and just other things like that really helped a lot. It was as much a health vacation as it was an academic adventure, but definitely senior year. And I think, I don't know if it's the pressure of finding a job, taking the hardest classes you're going to take, and all of that combined to create a perfect storm of insomnia. And I would say once, you know, you do that, you do get sick much more frequently, and it's something that is hard to overcome. So, you know, if you can just have good study habits, and I would say relaxation methods as well, or ways to cope or balance stress, then that will benefit you in the long run.
Agreed. I think that's one of those things that people don't realize how important it is until you've created you've dug a pit and you have to climb your way back out and reestablish good, you know, sleeping habits and eating habits and those kind of things. But I'd say probably 20 to 25% of the kids that I work with, when they go to school, they try to do everything. They try to take the hardest class. They try to take hard classes, and they're faced with a different kind of workload than they've had previously.
Yes.
And what they end up doing is they end up getting sick because they haven't been sleeping enough and they've been eating poorly. And then they have to drop a class or two. And that is devastating to somebody who has never had to do something like that. And I think that creates kind of this downward spiral where you have to dig out of that pit in your first or second quarter. And that's a terrible place to be.
That's true. And honestly, it's like your body just knows any chance that they can to just you think you can relax, and that's when it hits you, that you get sick. And I think another thing is, along with those students that try to take those super hard classes, is if you're so used to being on top, because I think we have a good amount of students that are high achieving, be okay understanding that when you go to college, you're one amongst a sea of bright kids. And if it's the first time you don't get that grade that you've always gotten, that it's okay.
Yep.
It's okay.
Yeah.
And it's okay to ask for help too.
Yeah, actually that's part of that support system. Part of the whole family thing is know who you can talk to, who are good resources, and you know, have the social skills of being able to have that kind of communication as well. I think
and don't be intimidated by your professors, I would also say. I will put it out there. I sought help from my math professor quite frequently because I was struggling. And you know what? It's a great way to also build relationships and learn how to network.
Absolutely. And I think freshmen often don't realize that going in and speaking with professors is not only encouraged, it's expected in top students. It's part of the social contract of a highly engaged learning group, is that you are going to use all your resources and you are going to seek them out appropriately. And I think you are spot on in that. Seek out your professors, introduce yourself in the first week, even if you are in a big school. That introduction can be a big part of establishing an early relationship that could turn into something very valuable when you're looking for grad schools or looking for labs to work in.
That's a great point. I was just going to say, like, whether it be like research opportunities or other things like that. And most professors, I feel like, have office hours or are required to have office hours. So use them.
Agreed. One of the things that goes right along with that introduction to new people, which you are going to be faced with, as I teach a four-point handshake. And I think that's actually it's a social skill. It's a psychological skill. Being able to introduce yourself to somebody and provide a good handshake. And people don't realize that's one of your first social introductions to somebody. And giving a weak handshake, or giving one that isn't confident, or one that is, you know, sidestepping or side glancing, that actually can set a tone and the wrong kind of message. So I encourage and I teach just the simplicity of a good handshake, and then encourage students to practice it in high school with everybody they meet, so that when they get to college, it becomes second nature.
That's absolutely a vital skill. And I remind my students of that before they go in for interviews too, like admissions interviews. I'm like, you want to be firm, but not too firm.
Yep, exactly.
And you're not the Hulk.
You don't know.
That's true.
Yep. 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 So what do you think, as we start to close this, what do you think the biggest gaps of preparation that you've seen students when they head off to college, what are the things that you go, oh my gosh, we're throwing them to the wolves and they don't know how to do X? What do you think the top ones are?
I think it's really the mental and emotional preparation, where they go in, and it ranges from a lot of the things we've talked about today in terms of, you know, finding and building your family, to dealing with rejection. And that could both be disappointments in the classroom, but also maybe in your personal life, because, you know, college is a social environment as well, and being able to deal with that in a way that's healthy, and being okay to, you know, being comfortable enough to tell someone when, you know, you do need help. And that is one thing I know some more and more schools are being made aware of, the mental and emotional support that they should provide. So like I had put, like, Duke, Davidson, John C. Smith, and Furman University are part of an initiative that is trying to offer better resources for whether it be meditation centers or, you know, counselors to help students be emotionally and mentally healthy as well. How about you?
Yeah, much in that same venue, I basically tell students, before they go to college, they need to know who they are, what they're about, and why they're going to college in the first place. And that can set the tone for a lot of the things that they're going to encounter and the choices that they need to make. And then right hand in hand with that is how to establish and communicate with your family or your support system. Because if you can do those things quickly, once you're on campus, and identify who you can count on and who will support you and vice versa, and know why that's important to you and why you're at school. If you can do those things, a lot of the other things tend to fall in place. But if you haven't practiced them before you get there, it makes it so much harder when you're basically hit the ground running when you arrive in September.
Yes, yes. These are great points. I think we offered a lot of helpful advice for our audience. And, you know, we think this is a really important initiative, right? That students, you know, be healthy and don't burn out. And that was the thing I'd say is just my last note would be don't burn out before you get to college. So some of these things apply to the present, especially that sleep part, you know. But do you have any closing thought?
I think along with the clown skills that we kind of tend to throw to the side, the things that are helpful, the handshakes, the tying of ties, those kind of things that we think are ancillary to life, which are actually some of the things that bring you joy. I think right now, a lot of students are going through the application process and they're hearing about colleges who are identifying their niceness. And we've talked about this in previous podcasts where niceness is a thing and it's all the social collateral and the social skills that you practice daily, like keeping the door open for somebody when they're behind you, giving a good handshake, saying please and thank you. Those are all, I think, just as important. And like you say, don't burn out before you get there so that you can practice these things.
Thanks for listening to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast, where we make getting into college easy and fun. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and subscribe to get updated each week when we release a new episode. Also, for more helpful college admissions information, visit our website at www.c2ccollegepodcast.com.